Hey there, veterans. This is Justin with a quick note before today's episode. There are a ton of resources out there for veterans, and I'm learning about more of them each and every day. That's why I've added a directory on my website to help you find the resources that are right for you. If you go to beyondtheuniform.io/directory, you can see these resources and you can add to them. Hope this helps and enjoy the show. Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Asiri, and each week I interview military veterans about their civilian career. Today's episode number 85 with Stubble & Stash founder Nick Carnazzi.
It's been amazing, and often sometimes very depressing. So yeah, I mean, it's not a logical transition, right, to go from intelligence and special operations to men's grooming.
The top two reasons to listen to today's episode are, number one, startups. Nick started his first company directly out of the Marines and talks about how important it is to pick the right co-founder and have difficult conversations with them up front. And he talks about starting and growing his second company, Stubble & Stash, without any business school experience, but instead using books, free resources, other people, and programs like the Stanford Ignite program to help him scale his business. Number two, for-profit versus nonprofit. Stubble & Stash is a for-profit venture that donates a portion of their proceeds to help veterans. He talks about how he made the decision to be a for-profit rather than nonprofit venture and the big difference that can make in the impact a startup has. As always, at beyondtheuniform.io, there are show notes for each episode where you'll find all the books, websites, and programs that Nick and I discussed today, as well as other great resources, including a free audiobook offer from audible.com. So with that, let's dive in to my conversation with Nick Carnazzi. Joining me today in Washington, D.C. is Nicholas Carnazzi. Nick, welcome to Beyond the Uniform.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So quick background for listeners. Nick is the founder and CEO of Stubble & Stash. It is a new breed of skincare for men and a company that also donates a large portion of their profits to high-impact charities that help veterans travel the road to recovery. Nick started out at the Naval Academy, after which he served in the Marine Corps for over 7 years as an intelligence officer in the special operations community. After the Marines, he served as the co-founder and CEO of the Stabilization Group, and then as a program lead at Prescient Analytics. So Nick, to start off, I always like to ask, at what point did you know you were going to leave the military, and how did you approach that decision?
Yeah, so that was a tough call. So for me, like you mentioned, I started off as an intelligence officer after graduation. And then in 2007, I joined the newly formed Marine Forces Special Operations Command, which was or is the Marine Corps' component to the special operations community. And at the time, they wanted officers to do about 4 to 5 years within the command and then go back to the conventional Marine Corps. And the idea was you learn these unique skills, get these, you know, just amazing experiences and kind of learn the special operations community. And then you bring those skills back and help make the Marine Corps better. The issue with that was after being in the community for, 4 years, going back to a conventional unit, it's a totally different lifestyle. You know, people joke it's like going from driving a Ferrari to driving a Pinto. Of course, that's not really an accurate comparison, but, for me, it was just, okay, I was a senior captain. I was going to be pinning on major soon. The monitor wanted me to go out to a third recon in Okinawa, and I'd already done a tour out there. And, I was getting older and family was kind of at the forefront of my mind. I was like, okay, well, if I go to Oki and kind of get back into the cycle again, I'm not really going to have an opportunity to start a family. And then also during that last deployment to Afghanistan, that's where I met the gentleman who had become my co-founder for the Stabilization Group. So it was one of those things, that the jobs in the Marine Corps, especially during times of war, are so important that I knew my heart wasn't in it 100% anymore. And that was the time to kind of like, pull the ripcord and get out and give my seat up to someone who was, all in. And I knew just my heart, I was 95% there, but not 100. So that was a really difficult call to get out, but I figured it'd probably be best for the Marine Corps and my Marines.
And so when you first got out, did you go directly into starting the Stabilization Group?
I did. So I had a nice chunk of leave, saved up. So when I went terminal, I had a few months of paychecks coming in, and I'd also been able to save a decent amount of money. So the idea was I would leave the Marine Corps and move to DC. And then my business partner at the time, Mike, he would leave USAID And he was going to stay in Buffalo and then, you know, commute back and forth to DC frequently. So got out of the Marine Corps, stayed in the Wilmington, North Carolina area for a few months as we got things up to speed. And then I moved up to DC, the fall of, 2011, fall winter of 2011. And, you know, was couch surfing for a while as we tried to get the stabilization group up and running.
And what was that? Actually, let me back up. So we were chatting just before we started recording about just the partner selection process, which seems to be one of the toughest spots with a startup. What advice do you have for veterans thinking of starting a company about how to find and vet a co-founder?
Yeah, see, that's really hard. Yeah, you know, I don't think there is one tried or true formula. So with Mike and I, unfortunately, we don't even talk anymore. It seems like when partnerships go bad, they turn toxic and stay that way. I had met him in Afghanistan, and he was the development advisor to our higher headquarters, to our Special Operations Task Force. So he was assigned to them, kind of advising the sort of commander on all things kind of development related. And for me, I wore a number of hats at the company level with the Marine Special Operations Company. And we were doing a lot of kind of kill capture missions, typical, you know, work, and it wasn't getting the desired results. And my boss, he's like, "Hey, Nick, you know, if you can come up with a plan that might, you know, help this out, let's do it." So, you know, I applied as the intelligence officer. I had a team of over 15, intelligence analysts and collectors who were serving us directly. And so I kind of shifted the focus away from the insurgency, which we really understood, to some of the socioeconomic drivers that were resulting in the instability that we were facing. And through that, had this idea to do a road project, and we don't necessarily need to go into all the details, but it was successful. That's how Mike and I got to work together. You know, we're on cell phones making these million-dollar deals with a paving company out of Herat, like just not quite sure what exactly we were doing, but it worked. So he and I spent a lot of time together in a wartime environment and forged a very close friendship. And when the project was rolling along, actually Secretary of State Clinton was briefed on it. And we were told that there was a 1 in 3 chance it was going to make it in the president's daily read book. And so people started telling us, "Hey, you guys should do this full time. Like, you should get out and do this full time because this is working. It's pretty quick." So it was just one of those things. It's not like I was on the search for a co-founder. It's like we did this work together in a wartime environment and it worked out really well. And like, hey, you know, like some of the issues I talked about with my consideration staying in the Marine Corps, and Mike was the same way. And with USAID, he'd done a lot of work. He also worked for the State Department proper. And so we both decided to go in all in on this project. But I think one of our biggest issues up front, you know, we didn't have the hard conversation about, you know, roles and responsibilities and what are the expectations. So I'd say my piece of advice to anyone, even if you're best friends, right, you really need to outline and plan for the event that the relationship starts going south. And before that happens, set up a way to mediate or set up a way to discuss that people aren't going to take personally. Because when you start a company, it's such a personal venture, right? Like, this is your baby and everyone's passionate about it, because if they're not, they shouldn't be your partner to begin with. But just acknowledging and being mature, like, hey, this might not work out the way we see it. So let's just ahead of time set up a way to deal with this. So in my case, you know, Mike being up in New York and me being in DC, we started losing trust in one another. And then that kind of fomented more distrust. And then I finally just walked away from it. But yeah, you got to be careful, you know, because it's not the honeymoon the whole time. And it does get hard, especially when money's involved. So yeah, just set up a process to get out, or set up a process to mediate, and understand you're going to hit some rocky roads going into it.
I appreciate your willingness to speak openly about that. And it seems like it's the hardest thing to do, is like when you're in that honeymoon phase of a co-founder relationship, to start to discuss the divorce proceedings and like the really, really awful stuff. And it seems like that does seem to be a consistent trend, as that's when it's the most valuable. And I just think it's interesting too, because, you know, some of my friends and some of the people I know who have had partnerships that went awry, you know, it was from people they didn't really know that well, but it sounds like in this case that you guys had worked together. You had worked together also in like extreme circumstances that you would think would cause a lot of these problems to be fleshed out. And so I think it underscores even more your advice of like, even if you know the person really well, have those awkward discussions up front, because they could prevent a lot of pain down the road.
Absolutely. It's one of those things. It's going to be uncomfortable at the time, right? Because people might interpret it as, oh, you think this is going to fail? You think we're not going to be friends anymore? You know, people can't interpret it that way. And it's like, no, not at all. It's, we need to just plan for this contingency, because if we do this now and we're both level-headed right now and we can work it out. And so when things do get hot, right, when tempers are flaring, when people are depressed or upset, we can fall back on this discussion we had, you know, during better times. And I think that makes, you know, dealing with it a lot easier. And in our case, had we done that, we might have been able to resolve the differences. But, you know, we didn't. And it was one of those things. It's like, okay, I'm just going to wash my hands and move on to other ventures.
That's great. I mean, I also admire that as well. I think I think of one of my favorite instructors at business school who said, don't waste 3 years of experience. You know, don't get 1 year of experience wasting 3 years doing it. And I like that thought of, like, although I imagine it was difficult to be able to make the clean break early on, whereas it could have dragged out for years and years and years and sucks up more time and resources. And I'm curious, like, what led you to Prescient Analytics, and what was that experience like?
So yeah, that was actually just a wonderful series of events. So when I was in the Marine Corps, we were using this analytical software that was amazing. And I knew that I wanted to use that software in our company when we started the stabilization group. So I was connected with a gentleman who was a good friend of one of my buddies in the Marine Corps, Rennie. And then by circumstance, or just randomly, was also a good friend of one of my sister's really good friends, right? So, like, I had two friends from two totally different sides of the world recommending this guy to me when I mentioned I wanted to use this type of software. And at the time, Prescient was one of this particular company's largest partners. So if, you know, you were a Marine Corps unit and you were using the software, you had guys or girls from Prescient on site helping you out, training you on it, helping you do some of your analytical work. So I met him originally because I wanted to use that software in the business, and they had a license so they could kind of help me out being a smaller business. So that's how I forged a relationship. And Pat, the gentleman's name, he was like, hey, Nick, you know, if this doesn't work out, I could definitely use you here at our company. And, you know, he was a West Point grad. I was a Navy grad, so I didn't hold against them. But, like, you know what, Pat, I might take you up on that. And when it looked like I was going to be walking away from the stabilization group, I called him up. I was like, hey, dude, remember that time when you said that you could use my help? He's like, yeah, man, come on in. We'll do a little formality interview and we'll get you on the team. I was like, right on.
So, that's awesome.
yeah, it's just like a great, great kind of way to transition out of a bad relationship and into a good one.
What was the genesis of Stubble and Stash? Like, do you remember the moment when you kind of had the idea for that?
Yeah, so that, you know, it was a tragic event that I've tried to make the most out of it. So in July of 2012, one of my really good friends, Justin Hansen, he was killed in Afghanistan. And he and I were in the same special operations unit together. He and I were actually rack mates when we went through selection, the process you have to go through before joining that community. So we became really close, despite the fact he was a sergeant, I was a captain, you know, it didn't matter, right? Like, he was a really good friend of mine. And so when I left the company, they redeployed to the same area where we were before. And that's where he was killed. And, you know, I got the phone call from one of my Marines, and I don't remember it. You know, I just kind of being like frozen for about 30 minutes staring at my cell phone after I hung up. And I knew Justin had a beard when he was shot. So I decided to grow my beard out for his funeral. It's like, I'm going to do this. I don't know why. I need to do something. This is what I'm going to do. And when I started growing it out, you know, if you've ever grown facial hair in the early stages, it starts itching. And I've always been a bit of a product guy. You know, I've always used like moisturizers and sunscreen because I had a skin cancer scare when I was very young. Turned out to be nothing, but like skincare products were not foreign to me. So started growing the beard out, started to itch. It's like, okay, well, I want something for my beard. Started looking around, and at the time there wasn't that much on the market. So I was like, okay, well, I'm a bit of a nerd. I can make this. I can solve this problem. So I started mixing up in my kitchen, and then I was just joking with some of my classmates who happened to be in the Naval Special Warfare community. And they're like, hey, dude, I want that. I was like, oh, well, this could be a viable business. So that's how it all started. The one of those need-based stories.
I just love this image of you in your kitchen cooking up some. it's like the Breaking Bad of men's supplies is what I picture.
Oh, yeah. I was actually watching Breaking Bad in my kitchen, laughing at myself at how ridiculous this was. And if my Marines could see me like in my kitchen making lotion, right? Like, what would they think?
What was the point when you decided to, like, when did this turn from like a project into I'm going to do this full time?
So I've always kind of had the entrepreneur bug, you know, going all the way back to like finding golf balls and reselling them on the golf course and whatever. So I've always known I wanted to do my own thing. I just didn't know what. And so I was working on Stubble and Stash for over a year before I went at it full time. And it was one of those things where it wasn't necessarily by choice, but again, the timing worked out well. So when I was at Prescient, the bulk of the company was supporting one contract, and that contract got cut in half, essentially. And I was a team leader at a number of people working under me, close to 30, supporting different organizations within the intelligence community here in the Beltway. And all the team leaders, we had an emergency meeting. We were all called in on Saturday. And they're like, hey, guys, this is what happened. We've already reviewed the rosters. We're going to be making cuts. Those people are going to be let go on Sunday. And so my boss and Pat, they called me to the office like, hey, Nick, you know, your team is taking the largest hit because the bulk of the funding cut affects, you know, those projects. And because of that, we're going to have to let you go too. And we've already found some of the jobs, some of the companies that want to bring you on board. We'd be more than happy to make that happen, but we're so sorry. And I was like, hey guys, listen, you know, if my team is going from 30 to 3 people, me as the platoon commander, I better be gone too. You know what I'm saying? Like that, you know, that's not good if like the leader's alive and no one else is, you know, like, anyway. So like, Nick, what do you want to do? I was like, well, you know what? Like, I'm just about to launch the first product. I think I'm going to do Stubble and Stash full time. And, they're like, that's what we were hoping you were going to say, because my company knew about it. They knew what I was doing and they were very supportive of it. And they're like, yeah, like, that's awesome. Let us know what we can do to help. So that's how that started. It's like, okay, got laid off and then, went all in on the beard care business.
It's like the universe was conspiring for you in that. And I love to hear how they handled that as well, of just trying to line you up with another job and trying to take care of you. And also just your leadership shining forth in that too, of just wanting to take care, you know, recognizing your team, if your team's gone, you should be gone as well. I think that's just, really, really cool how that all came about. I have a couple specific questions about Stubble Stash, but let's maybe just start with, what would you want listeners to know about your company? And in particular, I love this aspect that's philanthropic in the money that you make, or some of the money you make, which is very cool.
Yeah. So from the beginning, I knew I wanted to have a philanthropic component. I actually thought about starting it as a nonprofit, and just staying with that. And then, one of my mentors was like, Nick, no, that's a horrible idea. Like, private companies, the goal is to make money. And if you're making a lot of money, that means you can donate more money. So if you start with a philanthropic mindset from the beginning as a private company, you'll generate more than a nonprofit would. I was like, okay, roger that. But my idea was, you know, for me, and every veteran knows this, right? Like, when you're in the military, you have a clear sense of purpose, especially at war. Like, when you're downrange, like, you know, I've got two things at the top of my mind, you know, mission accomplishment and the welfare of my Marines, right? Like, that's what I'm living and breathing for. And then once you get out, you kind of lose that sense of purpose. At least I did. And that can lead to depression and things like that. So I knew that, like, I wanted my company to have a deeper purpose than making amazing grooming products, you know? And that's where the idea was, okay, well, where are guys struggling? Where are guys and girls struggling? And at the time, mental health was still very much in the shadows, especially in the intelligence and the special operations community. Your security clearance, that's your lifeline. If you lose that clearance, you're losing your job. And a lot of times, if people are seeking mental health treatment that really need it, they might lose their clearance. Unfortunately, some of those rules have changed, but I was like, okay, I want this to focus on helping men and women suffering from the mental wounds of war, so like PTSD, TBI, things like that. Because unfortunately, I'd lost a number of friends to suicide after we came home. A few of my Marines ended up taking their own lives. You know, it's like, okay, this shouldn't be happening, right? Like, so that's a passion point of mine. So that's kind of like what I built the business around. Like, okay, well, how can I grow this and continue to push the message? And over time, you know, the goal for me, I would love to be able to create a foundation that is solely funded through, you know, the sales of our products. Because right now, veteran issues, they're in the spotlight. The VA is getting some nice funding. But 10 years from now, who's to say people are still going to remember, right? So my idea is, let's set up some structure. Let's get some institutions rolling that are going to be able to support veterans and their needs you know, long after we're in the spotlight. So that's kind of why I structured it the way that I did from the beginning.
Well, I think that's awesome. I am a huge advocate of what you said. Is like, I think there's a lot of nonprofits. I think there are a lot of great nonprofits, and I think people can do a tremendous amount of good by creating for-profit ventures that, like you said, they generate a lot of money, and that money you can channel to do good. And I love that you've committed from the start to do that. And I also wanted to touch on, you know, I think it's great the support that you provide to veterans on that road to recovery. For listeners, I just wanted to point out a couple episodes about PTSD or people speaking about it that might be relevant if this resonates with them. And I'll put them in the show notes, but my conversation with Tim Avery and Dwayne France, they both specialize in mental health. They have a lot of great advice on this. An interview with Anthony Garcia, the founder of Guidon. He has a great just piece around his own battle with PTSD. And then a recent interview with David Smith, Marine enlisted guy who talks about his own battle with PTSD. And I think it's such a prominent challenge facing the veteran community. I want to make those resources available. I wanted to ask, especially for veteran listeners who are thinking of starting their own company, how long was it until you were able to pay yourself some sort of salary?
Yeah, it was, gosh, at least a year. It was a while before I drew. And to this day, I still pay myself like E2 or E3 pay. So it's people right now, like entrepreneurs are the rock stars. When I started, you know, we're our generation's starving artists. You know, you're not going to start a company and become a millionaire the next day. Like, it doesn't work that way. I went for at least a year without paying myself. And in some cases, you know, to this day, I only pay myself what my bills are. I try to keep my bills as low as possible. And I do have a disability rating from the VA, which was a surprise, but that little bit of added income has been a huge help in my ability to get this rolling. Your burn rate is always faster than you think it's going to be. Mm-hmm. So just understand that you're not going to be paying yourself, soon.
Yeah.
Unless you're one of those really rare cases where you launch and you're, you know, doing hundreds of dollars a month, which would be awesome. But sadly, it doesn't always work out that way.
Yeah, no, I appreciate your openness on that. For me, I was, it took me, when I started my company Storybox, it took 9 months of no salary and probably at least 10 grand invested in the idea. So that's, you know, quite a bit of money. When I raised my first round of 350,000, I paid myself 50,000 for at least a year or so. And that's, you know, my alternative offer with this consulting company was 180,000 a year. So it was quite a bit less. And I just think it's great for people. I think veterans are well suited for entrepreneurship. And I think it's also really essential that they realize how long they may need to go until they're starting to earn a decent amount of money. I'm wondering, what has the journey been like so far? I was going to ask about what your day-to-day life is like right now, but I'm just looking, you know, you've been doing this for over 4 years, and I imagine that your day-to-day has changed quite a bit. And so I just wonder, like, what has this entrepreneurial experience been like so far? What have you learned from that?
It's been amazing, and also sometimes very depressing. it's like, it's not a logical transition, right, to go from intelligence and special operations to men's grooming. Just a lot of research. You know, here in DC, there's a growing kind of startup scene, but a lot of it's focused on tech and like government related stuff. So I really didn't have too many people to leverage, you know, to help me get this actual idea going when it comes to like the technical aspects of it. But a few things that have really kind of dominated my time is on the product development front, right? So I don't make anything in house. I work with FDA certified, if you want to say that, manufacturers that follow the FDA good manufacturing guidelines. Just because for me, like, I'm all about handmade, homemade stuff, but if you don't have those necessary safety, you know, policies or practices in place, like, especially when you're talking about putting things on your skin. So getting to know that landscape and understanding, you know, good manufacturers, And then also understanding the interaction between the actual product and the packaging that you use, because chemical reactions can occur. And in some cases, your product, the integrity isn't going to stay where you think it, where it should be. So just learning that the hard way. And the big thing for me is just working with graphic designers. I would say one of the hardest things that I've faced is finding a good design team. And for me, I was always kind of relying on friends and family who had recommendations and, you know, trying to keep costs as low as possible. But in doing that, it actually set me back months and months in the process. So had I just bit the bullet and invested in a proper design firm early on, I would have been in a much better spot. You know, that's not to say I wouldn't do it again the way that I did it, because I wanted to get to market quickly and then iterate from there. But that was something I didn't imagine I was going to be dealing with, trying to find a graphic designer. And then you spend months working together and you realize it's not going to pan out. And then you're back to square one. And then another thing that I'm doing a lot more of now, which I haven't been doing for the past few years, is that when I launched, I wanted the ability to scale quickly. So I outsourced my order fulfillment to a third party warehouse, which is actually surprisingly common, because I figured, okay, I need to be the face of the brand and then to be out at trade shows and then to be at little pop-up markets. I need to be out like kind of drumming up business. I can't be packing orders. Well, after using that third party fulfillment, you know, service for a number of years, there were a few customer service issues that popped up. The company itself was great, but the way that they're structured just prevented them from doing certain things. And for us and our price point, you know, I wanted to provide a certain customer experience, and we weren't providing that. And that's when I decided to take fulfillment back in-house. So the game plan has changed from, okay, we'll just have a really lean, you know, workforce as we grow, outsource fulfillment to a warehouse, they'll handle it, we'll be good. Like, nope, bad idea, bringing it back in-house. And by doing that, it's going to save me tens of thousands of dollars annually, just in like the different fees associated with using that. And now my goal is to build the brand, get proper, like small office warehouse space in DC, and then start hiring other folks, full time. And part of their job description is going to be helping me pack orders. Right. So like right now it's like my stepdad helps pack orders. My girlfriend helps pack orders. I pack orders, you know, that's what we're doing now. since not using the warehouse, but you know, who thought you're going to do that? But it's actually, it's interesting. There's, I get a good sense of, you know, that's fulfilling to me. To do that, because I feel like I'm connecting with the customer, because I like to package things a certain way, and I want them when they open that up to like feel it wasn't just some industrial like thrown in there, you know, and like I include handwritten thank you notes in some cases, you know, just like random fun stuff like that, because I want my brand to be perceived in a certain way. And when I was outsourcing, we weren't hitting that mark, right? So learned that one the hard way, brought it in. So now I'm spending a lot of time thinking about packaging and what's the best unboxing experience, you know, how can I really make people feel good when they get their product, which I had thought about, but not nearly to this degree. So that's dominating my life right now.
You know, one of the things I found refreshing about your story is I think so many people and so many veterans go to business school and kind of have this set path. And I appreciated how you right out of the gate started a company and then you're on your second venture now. I'm curious though, what skills, especially for someone who's maybe on active duty and thinking of starting something right out of the military, what are some of the skills that you feel like were necessary prior to your starting the company? And I'm not sure if you picked those up at Prescient, and I know we'll get into Stanford Ignite, but I'm wondering what were some of the missing components that you felt were really important to have under your belt before starting your company?
Yeah, so you know, from the beginning, I knew I was kind of lacking in some of the finance and accounting areas. So I started reading a lot of books about that, because the language of business, you know, we could talk military stuff all day, but when it comes to certain, you know, terms and whatever you're using in the business world, I didn't have that. And I felt actually really insecure about that. So I started, you know, reading a number of books and trying to understand better, like, okay, what are, you know, some of the numbers I'm going to be looking at, like, how do I just understand the money that goes into it? Say people had told me that, you know, your burn rate is going to be faster than you think. So I wanted to understand that. I really wanted to be able to budget and kind of see what I was working with. And you know, if I take on investors, like what type of terminology are they looking at, you know? And I think I thought about that a little too soon. But then also just the procurement cycle in the civilian world, you know, working with different providers of components and things like that. Like, I really didn't understand that. So that was important that I could speak intelligently so they would take me seriously, you know, as I didn't want to be perceived as like, oh, here's some random guy who wants to, you know, make skincare products. Like, he's not going to last that long. So I really want to understand, how those, organizations operate so I could be a contributing member to the conversation, and understand what they're providing. So I would say for most veterans, that I've talked with, we all kind of have similar, feelings of inadequacy when it comes to understanding the financials, which I think is a pretty big part of it. And surprisingly pretty easy to pick up if you dedicate some time. I'm not sure if that answers your question, but I would say for me, that was one of the biggest components.
Yeah, no, totally. That opens up another question I was going to ask. And so you talked about books on finance. I'm curious, in particular, anything that comes to mind for finance, but then also for any veteran aspiring to entrepreneurship, if there's any resources, books, podcasts, websites, anything that you found useful that they could, you know, really take advantage of today to further their knowledge on either finance or entrepreneurship.
Absolutely. So I started my research with the SBA website, and that just kind of opened a lot of kind of rabbit holes I started going down. And then one of a resource that's been a great help to me has been SCORE, which is actually supported by SBA. And they provide mentorship and classes. And where I used to live in Old Town, Alexandria, Virginia, they actually, another West Point grad set up a nonprofit that is an independent nonprofit, but kind of works for the city. They recently renamed it. It's called the Capital Post, and their goal is to help veterans get their businesses off the ground. So they provide a lot of great mentoring and counseling resources, and they have weekly topics they discuss. So any type of mentorship that you can get early on is a huge help. So I found mine through SCORE. That I think they have offices pretty much in every major city. They're nationwide. That was a huge help. Another one that was recommended to me by, a book that was recommended to me, by one of my mentors, is a book called The E-Myth Revisited. And he pretty much talks about entrepreneurship and kind of debunks some of the misperceptions, and also kind of gives you some hard reality of what it's like out there. And they talk a lot of numbers in regards to like failed businesses, and he provides some case studies. And that was very eye-opening to me. And then one that I've just been flipping through and going back recently, is, I believe it's called Confessions of the Pricing Guy, or I can actually get the proper name for you. But one thing that a lot of people overlook is, how do you set your prices? And we can get into this later, but at Stanford, they really made me appreciate the importance of, you know, setting your price point. We didn't get into the technicals of that, you know, when I was at Ignite, but this book really helped me understand some of the technical aspects of it. Now I'm going back to some of the professors at Stanford, like, hey, like, can you help me better understand this, which is awesome. Those three, and then of course your podcast. And also I really like How I Built This, podcast.
That trumps all my other podcasts right now. I think, sorry to jump in, but yeah, I love that podcast. So that's from Gimlet Media, and they have just such great access to the founder of Spanx, the founder of Sam Adams, the founder of Warby Parker, 30-minute episodes, super succinct, and they just dive deep on, I just think it's such a great, vivid appreciation of what startup life is like and just the raw grittiness of it that these people go through.
Oh yeah, it's refreshing. You know, it's one of those things that it's motivating, because you see these amazing companies, and you're like, gosh, how they do that, right? And then you hear like the humble beginnings, and like they hit speed bumps too. And for me, it's quite motivating. And then another book that, it's an old one, but another one of my early mentors recommended, I kind of go back to it, you know, for a little motivation, is Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. I probably read that one once a year, but I like some of the parts in there. It helps me kind of keep my head up when I'm feeling a little beat down.
That's awesome. And for listeners, I'll put the links in all the show notes to those books and podcasts. If you like audiobooks, Audible's given a free book to Beyond the Uniform listeners, so you can knock one of those out at Audible if you go to beyondtheuniform.io/books. What about Stanford Ignite? So at what point in your startup journey did you go there, and what was that experience like?
So that was one of the best experiences of my life. So a good friend of mine, another entrepreneur, Alex Martin, he was the gentleman who recommended that I attend. He's like, you have to apply. You have to go. Like, whatever you do, do this. I'm like, okay. And you know, I kind of felt starting a company without my MBA, I was one of those guys that kind of felt like, well, you know, do I have credibility in the business space? You know I have credibility in other areas, but do people perceive me as a credible business person without having an MBA? And, you know, over time, people told me like, no, you don't need your MBA, like it's not worth it. And I started realizing that a little bit, but then I knew that there are certain skills that I was lacking. I was like, I wish I knew the right way to do this, or at least I wish I had a good, you know, guiding light or left and right lateral limit, so I know that I'm on the right track. And I felt like I was missing some of these things. And then Ignite was the perfect fit for that, because I knew I didn't need like a full 2-year MBA, but I wanted some hard skills that I didn't have, and I wasn't confident that I was finding the right resources. So I went not last summer, but the summer before. So the summer of 2015, which I think was their second iteration for the post 9/11 veterans. And it was just amazing being around a group of like-minded veterans, and also the support from Stanford and the university and all the professors and the student body was just absolutely amazing. You know, they told us that, hey, you're going to be treated just like our MBA candidates. You know, we don't want you to think any differently. And we're like, oh, sure. You know, it's like, yeah, right. They're not going to treat us the same, but they absolutely did. And I went to the reunion this past October that they, our reunion was coincided with a few of the MBA classes, and all the MBAs were asking about us, and it just such an amazing community. And to have that support network and have that access, I can't say enough, you know, good things about it. And also just coming away with a specialized, you know, education in the startup world and getting some of these courses taught by some of the brightest minds, you know, in the industry, it was just invaluable. And the fact that the Commit Foundation, you know, provided so much financial support for it, I mean, you can't beat that.
That's awesome. I'm curious, you know, having gone, so I'm imagining you were 2 or 3 years into your second company when you did this. Do you have any advice for someone, whether, you know, do you think you would have gotten more value before starting your business, or because you had had the hands-on and actually been applying it, do you think you extracted more value from Ignite because you had those years under your belt?
I think I took more value from it because I had the years under my belt. There were a number of people in my class that hadn't started their own companies. They thought about it, but they hadn't pulled the trigger yet. And there were topics that would come up, and you could tell the people that had their own companies because we were just focused and taking so many notes, right? Because we encountered this problem and we knew how valuable and important it was. But the people that hadn't started their own companies, they didn't appreciate it. So they weren't as focused. And also I could ask a lot of questions, and get a lot of answers to things that I needed, you know, in the real world. Would I have liked to have attended before I launched my company? Absolutely. I think that would have been a huge help. So I wouldn't have made some of the mistakes I made early on. But if I'm being totally honest, I think I probably took more from it having already launched my venture because I had already encountered some issues. I had some questions. I knew where some of the gaps in my knowledge, you know, was, and I could actively move to fill those gaps.
That's great. I mean, I think back to the Naval Academy and the guys and gals there who were prior enlisted. I mean, they went in and they were just laser focused. They knew what was going on. You know, I was straight out of high school, just figuring out what end was up, and they just honed in on career and class, and they just like blew things away. And, you know, my experience at business school as well was like coming straight from the military. I just had no context. And so while, you know, a lot of my classmates were delving super deep, I was learning like what investment banking was and what consulting was. And so it seems like I can imagine how having that experience, you were able to get a lot more value and apply it to real world situations that were allowing you to like not only benefit your business, but just get a firmer grasp on the concepts being taught. So I think that's really, really awesome. And just a great endorsement for Stanford Ignite. And I know I'll be having a couple people from that program on the show soon, but it seems like a really incredible resource for veterans to look at for those who are thinking of starting their own company. One thing I was going to ask is just what other advice would you, I know we've covered a lot of this already, but what other advice would you provide to veterans who are thinking of starting their own company?
Yeah, so I would say, you know, for veterans who are thinking about starting their own company, and also for service members who are thinking about getting out, starting your own company can be very lonely at times. And for me, when I was in the Marine Corps, you know, I was living in Wilmington, North Carolina. All my friends were, you know, MARSOC guys, and we all thought we were pretty chill. You know, we weren't the belt fed high and tight. So when it came time to separate, we thought that we were just going to assimilate and join the civilian population and do just fine. Right. Well, I got out and moved up to DC, and then I quickly found that people appreciated my experience, but they didn't understand it. And I started feeling isolated because all of my good military buddies that were in DC moved away. So my military kind of support network, which I didn't think I was going to need, you know, sure, I was going to have my close friends that were always going to be buddies. But I didn't appreciate how lonely it could be and how isolating it can feel to be surrounded by people who don't fully understand your position. So it took me longer than I like to admit, but that's when I started reaching out to different veteran organizations, trying to find veteran groups here in DC, in addition to startup groups. Because almost like being a veteran, when you start your own company, only other founders or only other people in early stage companies can appreciate what you go through, just like only other veterans can appreciate, you know, your the full extent of your military experience. So I really wish that I had a stronger kind of support network already established before I left the military, and then also before I started my company, because there are a lot of opportunities to get to know people and interact, and I just didn't capitalize on all those. So I would, some of my, you know, greatest advice, and I love giving it now, is to have that support network, whether you're about to get out of the military or you're about to start your own company, because it does get very lonely at times. And, you know, people that are in it, you know, we understand it, and there's always an open ear, you know, it's like the support group, right? So that's one of the biggest things. And also too, it's going to take longer than you think. It's always going to take longer than you think. And I think that's causes a lot of entrepreneurs to stumble, but veteran entrepreneurs, you know, we're used to that, right? Like, no plan survives first contact with the enemy. We're used to having setbacks. Like, we can roll with it and not be horribly offended. So I think that's one of the strong points and one of the reasons why veteran entrepreneurs are so successful, is because our resiliency and that endurance that we have. But you know, it's an amazing experience. Like, it's going to be some of the best times of your life. It's also going to be some of the lowest points of your life. And just to appreciate that going in, you know, and just maintain that kind of like positive mental outlook and that sense of humor. You know, those are some of the biggest things you can do to be successful. Mm.
Yeah, I love that, man. I think that's so spot on. And, you know, I feel grateful to have gone to business school at Stanford and love my experience there. And when it comes to entrepreneurship, I feel like the military training has been probably a larger portion of what's helped me in terms of that determination and just breaking down walls and blocking and tackling and overcoming impossible obstacles. And I love what you said too about things taking longer. I feel like my personal mantra became that, like, just to expect that everything was going to take 10 times longer and cost 10 times more than I expected. And I don't know if that's a flaw in my own anticipation of what things are, but it's like every single detail seemed to be harder than I thought it would be. And that led to the second part for me, which was like, if this was easy, everyone would do it. You know, I think that entrepreneurship is so enjoyable. It's so great to have that autonomy that if it was a simple thing, there's probably not a person on the planet that wouldn't want to do it. And that kind of gave me a little bit of hope in those times when you just hit these unforeseen obstacles that just kind of seemed like roadblocks. And, but I appreciate the way you explain that and how that military training does prepare people to try to find ways around that and not let those obstacles be insurmountable.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and it's so true what you said about the 10 time, you know, burn rate and the time. You know, one of the big bumps I hit last year, I knew I was going to be launching the new products and I knew the capital that was going to be involved. So I'd been saving and saving and saving so I could launch that because I had submitted application for a line of credit, but I knew that was taking time. So I wasn't betting on that. And so I had a decent stockpile of cash in reserve to launch the new line. And then come to find out the accountant that I had been using underestimated my quarterly taxes. And because of that, I had a massive tax bill, that I had to settle. And had I not had that reserve of cash, I would have been in a really bad spot. So, you know, okay, well, this cash was for the launch, and now it's going to pay these back taxes, and which delayed the launch, you know, but you just roll with it. So you just figure out other ways, you know, to, okay, how can I decrease my expenses, increase my profitability so we can start making that money back, you know, for the launch. And God, that, talk about a punch to the gut. Like, that took the wind out of my sails. You know, but you keep pushing through it. So the way it goes.
Oh man. Were there any habits, you know, I think that there's so many habits that we've talked about that serve us well as veterans in the civilian workforce. I'm just wondering the counter example though, is there any habits that you felt like you needed to break or anything that you needed to overcome coming from a military background to be successful in the civilian career?
Yeah. So this is a tough question because, you know, I know I did it a little bit and I see other veterans doing it and it seems more at the officer and senior enlisted level when people get out and they still try to carry their rank with them. Mm. That's off putting to a lot of people. And then, you know, the veteran themselves is somewhat offended because like, oh, don't you understand? Like, you know, I'm so-and-so. It's like, no one cares.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, they appreciate your service, but like, I don't care if you're a captain or a major or a colonel or, you know, like no one cares or they do care, but they don't know what it means. So they're not going to appreciate it to the level that you want them to.
Yeah.
So I would, you know, and some people just don't let it go. So like once you're out, just let it go. You know, just deep breath, exhale. Like you have those memories, like amazing experiences. But I see some guys that kind of get in that cycle of reliving it. And like going back to like the good old days, you know, and like, oh, I remember how this used to be. And like, it's hard not to fall into that trap. And I see some of the people doing that and it prevents them from growing as a civilian. So I think that trips up a lot of people. And also to the intensity, right? Like you have to be intense, especially in the startup world, but you know how it is in the military. Like you can be intense with another member of the military and they get it. They're not offended. Some people I found, you know, you can't be as intense with them if they don't have that background. So just kind of tempering that and then also tempering expectation in regards to how quickly things can get done. You know, I think veterans, we just have a habit of trying to get things done and just move. That's not across the board. So just appreciating your position and your background is not the same as some of the people that you're going to encounter in the civilian world. Mm-hmm. Those are the stumbling blocks that I personally encountered and seen, you know, some of my other, you know, startup buddies, trip over.
That's awesome. I think that's super spot on. Well, I know we're up at the end of our time, but I wanted to just kind of leave room to give you a little bit of a soapbox and just say, you know, you've covered a lot of great value, about startups, about, personal life and your own career path. But I just wanted to see if there's anything else you wanted to share that we haven't covered. It could be about personal life or professional life, but knowing you have this audience of veterans listening, what else would you want to share with them?
Yeah, I would say, you know, for the veterans that are already out and for the folks that are thinking about getting out is, and this has kind of become my mantra, is ensure you find that purpose. You know, we talked about it earlier that when you're in the military, you have a very clear sense of purpose. You know what you're working towards is something greater than yourself. And I've seen a lot of people, myself included, you get out of the military and you don't have that greater sense of purpose. And you start getting kind of bummed out and depressed and lethargic, and maybe you don't go to the gym as much as you used to. And I think that's one of the biggest stumbling blocks that we have. And I think it's important for people to realize that will happen. And the fact that you're getting bummed out is not abnormal. But by being able to find something you're truly passionate about and something that brings you a greater sense, you know, than just yourself really helps with it. And, you know, I remember one of the happiest kids I've ever seen in my life was in the middle of nowhere, Afghanistan, outside the barbed wire of a UN school near the Pakistani border, right? I've never seen kids so happy in my life, and they're beating each other up for a soccer ball. And, you know, you look here in the States and people talk about depression, they talk about suicide rates. And, you know, here we have one of the most affluent societies, yet we have some of the highest depression rates in the world, right? Like, why is that? And for me personally, I feel like it's because people kind of lose sense of that purpose, or they're doing things that aren't making them happy. And then they have that fear of like pulling the trigger to pursue something because they're afraid of, I don't have a safety net or this or that. So for me, it's just, you know, go back to, are you doing something that makes you happy? Are you willing to take the risk to change it if you're not? And what comes with that? You know, what pain comes with that? And is that pain of transition, you know, ultimately worth the happiness it's going to bring? And I think a lot of cases it's yes, but I think a lot of people are afraid to take that step. So just to realize that and also understand that there are a lot of people that want to see you succeed, and there are a lot of assets out there available to help you, and don't be afraid to ask for help. You know, for me, I was always kind of, I didn't want to ask too much of my mentors. I didn't want to, you know, hey, what do you think about this? Or, hey, could you help me with that? You know, because I didn't want to burden people. but now I'm in the position to help, like, give advice. And I love it when people come ask me questions. You know, I'd love to help other people, especially veterans, as they start their ventures. So don't be timid like I was when it comes to asking for help, because a lot of people want to help you, you know, and especially in the veterans community, it's no strings attached, you know, so just like ask for it. So I think that's my soapbox.
Oh, this is awesome, Nick. I appreciate the advice. And I just love the organization you've set up and the way that you're making a difference as a for-profit venture for veterans. And just think it's awesome to see you growing this and looking forward to seeing your continued success on this. So thanks for taking the time to share with the Beyond the Uniform community.
Yeah, I really appreciate it. Thanks for having me. Anything I can do to help other vets out, you know, I love it.
Surface.
Thanks for listening. Three important notes before you go. First, Audible.com is offering a free audiobook for Beyond the Uniform listeners. I love Audible. I get 3 books a month, and it's a great way to use net, or no extra time, to polish off books while you run, drive, etc. If you go to beyondtheuniform.io/books, you'll not only find this offer, but you'll also find a list of every single book that has been recommended on this show. One in particular I'd recommend is The Hard Thing About Hard Things. This is a great story of determination and also a glimpse at what startups are really like. That's at beyondtheuniform.io/books. Second, there are so many great resources out there for veterans, it can be difficult to know all about them. That's why at beyondtheuniform.io/directory, you'll find a list of every single resource that's been mentioned on the show or that I've been able to find. You can also add your own if you find one I've missed. Lastly, I've put together several different free ebooks that provide data for veterans about their civilian career possibilities. This quantitative information serves as a great complement to the qualitative interviews I do each week. Go to beyondtheuniform.io, click on resources, and you'll be all set. Have a great week, and I'll be back next week with more interviews with military veterans about their civilian career.